I'm Sylvia Burgos Toffness, and this is Deep Roots Radio, a show where every week our guests help us connect the dots between what we eat and how it's grown, because every food dollar you and I spend either protects or degrades the environment, provides us with food that's high in nutrition or filled with empty calories, helps small farmers make a living wage, or keeps laborers under the poverty line. I hope you enjoy this interview. Danielle Nierenberg is the co-founder of Food Tank. And Food Tank is a think tank for those of us who, and that's a growing us, who care about things like GMOs, obesity, poverty, hunger, and the ability of sustainable methods to actually feed the world. Danielle, I'm so glad that you're with us. And let me give a little more of an introduction, if you don't mind. So Danielle is an expert in sustainable ag and on food issues. And in fact, she's traveled to dozens of countries looking at these issues. And her knowledge has informed over 3,000 news outlets, which is an amazing figure, including the New York Times and Wall Street Journal, USA Today, the International Herald Tribune, Le Monde, The Times of India, Reuters News Service,
wow,
and so much more. She's been a keynote speaker in many, many conferences and has authored several books and publications, including the 2012 book, Food and Agriculture, The Future of Sustainability. And on top of that, she was with the Peace Corps for 2 years.
Oh, my.
In the Dominican Republic. Danielle, thank you for being here this morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thanks. You're obviously looked to by numbers of experts and reporters, policymakers around the globe for what you've learned and the purpose of Food Tank. So can you tell us in a summary fashion, what is Food Tank? I mean, what does it do?
That's a great question. You know, Food Tank is a think tank, as you said, devoted to making the food system better. And we do that through researching and highlighting economically sustainable ways of alleviating hunger, obesity, and poverty, and convening, you know, groups and individuals and content to really push for food system change.
Now, when were you established? How long have you been at work at this?
We launched in January of this year, but the work is really inspired by all of the work that I did on the ground, traveling to more than 35 countries in sub-Saharan Africa, Asia, and Latin America, talking to farmers and farmers groups, scientists and researchers, journalists and academics, and other stakeholders, and really collecting their thoughts about what's working on the ground.
So you've really kind of tapped the brains that are out there and their experiences, and are you kind of pulling it together for others who need it in order to advocate for their work?
Absolutely. I mean, I think there's so much good work being done that we never hear about because these organizations are, you know, in remote locations. They don't have fancy websites. You know, they're not able to access the venues that I do. And so I really feel that part of my job is to really share their knowledge and their stories with you know, people like you, reporters, you know, regular consumers or eaters, and particularly, you know, the funding and donor communities, the folks who are investing in solutions and giving them the opportunity to know what's out there.
What is it that prompted you to begin Food Tank? I mean, what was it in your experience that kind of triggered this activity?
You know, again, it's really listening to all those stories of hope and success that no one else was hearing about. I really wanted to make sure that those stories were known, you know, especially when we think of the developing world, we think of conflict and disease and famine, and we don't think of these places, especially in sub-Saharan Africa, as hopeful places, and really sort of changing, you know, the dialogue and making sure that we were sharing these stories so that other people knew about them.
That's something that really impresses me about your website and the things that you've mentioned over the last just couple of minutes, which is the notion of story. When people think of a think tank, they tend to think of data, and they tend to think of the research, of course, that leads to the collection of data and a push for policy, but you talk about stories. Why are stories important to what it is that you do?
I mean, I think, you know, obviously data and on-the-ground research and data collection is a big part of what we do. But we feel, you know, from our experience that if you're not combining the numbers and the statistics with real-life examples of things that are going on in the world, that those numbers don't mean anything. I think we're all overwhelmed when we hear about, you know, the number of hungry or the number of people who are obese or the statistics around climate change. We all get very overwhelmed. And we stop listening and we stop trying to do anything. But if you make this about people and putting human faces, on what these issues are, then it makes a big difference.
You know, that is true. It's interesting. What you do and kind of my experience intersects on a number of planes. And one of them is because I actually am the communications person for a foundation. And so it's a private organization. Private foundation, a nonprofit that makes grants to nonprofits that are working to reduce poverty in an 8-state region of the upper Midwest and Pacific Northwest. When you work with or try to engage in funding organizations, what are some of the questions or what are some of the challenges that you find?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, foundations have a real emphasis on, you know, their own data collection, and they want, you know, numbers to point to of how something has improved or what gains have been made. And often I found, you know, doing all this travel, whether it's in Ethiopia or India or elsewhere, that some of these things can't be quantified. Mm. And I often feel like some of the questions that foundations, you know, what they want answered don't always make sense. And I'll just give you one example.
Sure.
You know, I met with a group of women in Niger who, before they started what's called a market garden, they were making about a dollar a day. They were making about $300 per year or a little bit more. And, you know, they struggled to feed their families. They couldn't send their kids to school. You know, they were really struggling. But I met them about a year after they started what, you know, again, this market garden where they were growing produce, they were growing indigenous trees, they were growing some grains, and they had learned how to use solar drip irrigation to irrigate their crops in this very dry region of Niger. And now they were making, because they were selling their crops both to their neighbors and in the capital of Niger, Niamey, they were making about $1,500 per year, or three times as much. And,
wow.
You know, you can talk about what that meant in terms of, you know, GDP for the community or whatever. But what I wanted to hear from them is how that had changed their lives. And when I asked them that, they said, you know, we're fatter now. We're able to buy bicycles for our husbands so that they can get to work. We're able to send our children to school for the first time. And those sorts of stories and anecdotes are, I think, way more powerful often than, you know, whether malnutrition rates were decreased or whatever data a lot of foundations and agencies want to collect. I think it's really, how has your life changed? How are things different than they were before you started this? Mm. And those stories are very compelling to me, and I think to a lot of us.
You're right. I always, in my mind, when I think about communications, I always think that it is the emotional content, it is the values content of a story that really changes people's heart. And the data gives them the rationale they need to make that heart change that they'd like to make. So when you...
Absolutely. I mean, sorry to interrupt, but I think so much of this is about emotion and compassion and really, you know, knowing that these people, you know, they're... We tend to think of the hungry as, you know, something that's happening elsewhere in the world. And these people are very much like us. They want to make their lives better. They want to take care of their families. You know, they have dreams and hopes that they're unable to attain a lot of the time because, you know, they simply don't have enough food. But the more we can, you know, realize that they're the same people as we are, you know, I think the more change that can be made.
Mm-hmm. Your website is filled with these stories. It's a wonderful, it's like a treasure trove that people can tap into. What is there, how is it that you think about sharing these stories? I mean, does a person have to Or journalists have to go to your site and ask for permission? Or how do you like things to happen?
No, all of the content that we're producing on the Food Tank website is available to anyone who wants it. We just ask that they, you know, credit Food Tank with putting it together. But the website is not meant to just be about, you know, Food Tank and our research. We really want it to be thought of as a platform for other groups to share their information. You know, if you've been, you know, thinking about food and agriculture for a long time, you realize that, you know, a lot of these groups that are working on the same issues are not working together. They're working on their own silos. There's not sort of one convening group that's bringing all of this research together. And so we really want the Food Tank website to be thought of as a platform for, you know, whether you're a farmer or a policymaker or an eater, that you can come to the website and find what you need, as well as, you know, think of it as a place to share your own stories, to share the innovations that are happening in your own community, whether you live in Malawi or Chicago.
So you can actually, so if I am a member of a food hub, we're kind of developing, I'm part of food hubs that are being developed in my own area. If there's good information that arises out of that, that's something that I could actually share through Food Tank?
Yes, we're absolutely encouraging guest authors and writers, and not just to share sort of their stories, but to ask questions of our readers. You know, we get, you know, several thousand hits per day on our website. People are reading that content. Our newsletter is going out to thousands of people each week. So, again, we really want it to be thought of as a platform to share information, to ask questions, to really get people inspired and energized to work on these issues.
Wow. Now, why do you think there's been such immediate popularity of your site and of Food Tank?
I think especially here in the United States, there's a real craving for these issues, for lack of a better word. People have been overwhelmed by the sort of doom and gloom stories, whether it's from the environmental movement or from the food advocacy world. And I think people are you know, excited to read about things that are working and to know that there's a platform out there to share these stories. So, you know, I think the writing style is a little bit different from some of the other sites that you see. And we're, again, you know, hope and success is what we want to articulate. We know that, you know, we have to focus on the problems. But if you don't have solutions to, you know, back this material up, then all of us feel hopeless and like we can't do anything.
You know, that's very, very true. One of the things that you're pointing to and I thought was quite interesting was that you have found solutions anywhere and everywhere in the world. Very often, you know, in the U.S. we tend to think, well, we've got the solutions, we'll take them elsewhere. And we don't realize that there are innovations and really practical solutions in other parts of the world. Is that something that you're finding is opening people's eyes?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, as Americans, we think we can't, you know, we know how to save the world, right? And I think we forget that there are so many, you know, low-tech or combinations of low and high-tech solutions and innovations that are happening all over the world that we could also learn from. And, you know, this was really clear to me last year when the drought, you know, devastated the U.S. You know, farmers were really suffering, crops were dying. And, you know, I think a lot of what we could learn is already happening in the developing world, especially in sub-Saharan Africa, where farmers have been dealing with extreme weather events and the effects of climate change for a while now. And we tend to think that, you know, information flows only one way, from us to them. And I think we have a lot to learn if we look to the solutions that they've been developing, you know, in whether it's, you know, Ethiopia or Senegal or other places in sub-Saharan Africa.
You know, you've traveled to so many countries in just a handful of years. What were a couple of surprises as you made these journeys?
A big surprise for me is how much hope I saw in Rwanda. You know, my impressions of Rwanda before I went there were obviously from the terrible genocide that happened about 16 years ago. And traveling through the country and talking to farmers, you know, and really realizing that that's a country that's trying to recover, and it's, you know, the scars of what happened are still there, but there's so much innovation going on. And, you know, just seeing that hope still gives me chills, because it is a very hopeful place, and they're trying to, you know, sort of rebirth and recover from the terrible things that happened. And Ethiopia, again, was a huge sort of surprise to me. You know, I grew up seeing those pictures of kids with bloated bellies mm-hmm. from the famines that have happened there, you know, throughout the 1980s. And, you know, seeing what's being done, you know, I met a farmer who lives in the Tigray region who, you know, was really struggling to plant crops because he couldn't water them. He couldn't find water to irrigate his crops. And, you know, he started digging a well, and his neighbors thought he was crazy. His wife left him because she's like, you're never going to find water.
Oh, wow.
And he eventually found water about 16 meters down and built a pump to get that water up to his crops, and was able to build a better house. His wife wow. came back to him. He's, you know, teaching other farmers now how to build these hand pumps. And so, you know, you just see so much innovation going on every day. And, you know, even when people think, you know, like I said, his wife left him. His neighbors thought he was crazy. He kept going because he really believed that he could do it. And, you know, seeing that kind of entrepreneurship is really exciting.
For those who may be just joining us right now, we're speaking with Danielle Nierenberg, co-founder with Ellen Gustafson of Food Tank, which is a think tank for a better food system worldwide. You think about the success that you've had just in this last year, Danielle, and I know you're going to be speaking at a conference just at the beginning of November. You've got numbers of places that you'll be. What do you see for the next year or so for the Food Tank?
You know, we're really trying to ramp up our research. We'll be putting out a research publication in November about the International Year of Family Farming, which takes place in 2014. And our publication really talks about all of the things that family farming contributes to the world, not just in terms of food and nutrition security, although those things are important, but also the other things that family farming provides in terms of social stability, preventing urban migration, helping restore and protect biodiversity. So we're really excited about that project, and we've been collaborating with the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization on it, and we'll be doing that throughout 2014. You know, we've built some really exciting collaborative partnerships, including with a number of organizations who are highlighting the importance of indigenous crops. We'll be working on the role, the important role that youth play in cultivating a better food system. The role of women farmers is obviously very important to us. We've done a lot of work on the issue of food loss and food waste, and how to prevent mm-hmm. Both consumer wastage of food, but also the waste that happens in farmers' fields. So these are just some of the projects that we're working on. And again, really making Food Tank a central convening point for people who are concerned about these issues.
One of the things that struck me from your website is that you, obviously, that you know, your tag is that you're a think tank, but you tie things right down to the practical. I mean, this is not just airy-fairy, you know, in a palace kind of thinking. It's tied to the practical solutions, and in that I see you as being a really important resource, because people can kind of look at it, understand it, and then say to themselves, so how do I work with this? How do I do something with this? You talked about food waste. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. You know, worldwide, about 1.3 billion tons of food is wasted each year. About 40% of that happens in the developing world as a result of poor infrastructure, including roads that don't allow farmers to get their crops to market in time, poor storage practices that, you know, allow moisture or pests to infect crops. And then about 30% of food waste happens in the industrialized world, and that's because of you and me. We go to Costco and we buy too much, you know, those big boxes of cereal and other food that we only end up eating a small portion of before it goes stale.
Mm-hmm.
Or we don't understand sell-by and expiration dates at grocery stores, and, you know, throw away things before they've gone bad. you know, the lack of culinary skills in the United States over the last, you know, couple of decades. We don't really understand, you know, we trust those, the labels instead of our own senses. You know, we don't smell food to know if it's gone bad. We don't look at it and see if it's gone bad. We just throw it away because of that date. So there really needs to be a lot of education on the consumer side, because food waste in the United States in particular is really low-hanging fruit. You know, we could do a lot to solve it just by educating ourselves a little bit better. Retailers also have a big responsibility because, you know, the way they display food often means that it goes bad before it needs to, because they're piling it up in pretty displays at Whole Foods or at Jewel or other grocery stores. And, you know, just small changes in the way both consumers and retailers handle these things can make a big difference. In the developing world, you know, very simple things like, you know, using drying sheets and dehydrating food could really save farmers a lot of money and provide them extra income throughout the year. In places like Western Africa, farmers are learning to store their crops better just simply by putting them in triple layer bags to make sure that pests don't get inside. And, you know, there are just very simple things that can happen. Policymakers also need to step up to the plate, especially in the developing world, and make sure that farmers have the infrastructure that they need, whether it's cooling centers for milk or, again, better roads to get their crops to market.
One of the lines on your website, and you've mentioned it a couple of times here, is to focus on the idea of hope and success. We can make changes, and here are some examples of things that are really working or are likely to work, so that we can share this information, replicate it where we are, scale it up where we are. Lots of people contend that without GMOs and without industrial ag, the whole world's going to starve. You seem to be proposing that sustainable ag can actually have a very viable place in our economies and in our diets, and then in the activity of any country. Is that, am I getting it right?
Absolutely. I mean, I don't think sustainable agriculture necessarily means that it has to be small-scale agriculture. I think, you know, a lot of the innovations that are taking place can have a lot of potential to be scaled up and replicated on big and small farms alike. But I think, you know, that the sustainable agriculture is the only way to go if we're concerned about feeding, you know, feeding the future. We're, you know, at a point where climate change is not just a myth anymore or sort of a dream, but it's actually happening, and not just in the developing world, but here in the United States. And we really need to make change in the food system now before it's too late. I do have a lot of hope, but I also see the urgency of these issues. Mm-hmm. And, you know, from the research that I've done on the ground, I think that there's so much potential out there, but it doesn't have the investment that it needs for sustainable agriculture to really to take off in a way that will help feed everyone. We need that investment, and governments have been ignoring agriculture for a long time, and they need to really step up to the plate.
So here we are. Numbers of people are listening to this broadcast. So there are farmers out there, and all of us are eaters and food lovers. What is it that you'd like us to do?
I think, you know, we all need to realize that food connects us all. I think we've thought of agriculture as something that other people do, but we're all really connected to the food system. You know, all of us have to eat, right? And we do it more than once a day if we're lucky. And so really making the connections that you're not separate from the food system, that you have some power here, that you can vote with your fork and make choices that are sustainable and support local economies, and you can vote with your vote by voting for policymakers who believe in a food system that should, you know, provide food and income to everyone.
All right, so how do people get a hold of your website? Where do they need to go?
They can visit foodtank.org or email me at danielle@foodtank.org if they need more information.
All right. Can you tell us again, though, about this publication that's coming out in November so that we can keep our eye open for it?
Absolutely. It'll focus on the International Year of Family Farming, and it's untitled right now, but I'll be able to share it on our website. very soon. And again, it's around the International Year of Family Farming.
All right. Now, as we're kind of wrapping up here, Danielle, any kind of parting thoughts, any one or two kind of major messages you want to make sure that both our farmers who are listening and our consumers who are listening kind of take away?
Again, that, you know, we all have power in our daily lives to make the food system better, that we can make choices that are sustainable and that really, you know, not just nourish us, but can also nourish the planet.
Well, thank you very much. Danielle, thank you for taking the time to be with us this morning. It's been terrific to take a look at your website, foodtank.org, and to see the numbers of stories and practical solutions that are available to all of us from all over the world. Thank you for being that connecting place.
Thanks for this opportunity. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye now. Have a good weekend.
You too. Bye.
Visit my website, www.bronxtobarn.com, for archived podcasts and to learn more about my 100% grass-fed beef.